There are several subjects people frequently want to discuss. These subjects can range from weighty theological questions, such as how one may reconcile the idea of a loving and omnipotent God with a world in which evil so often seems to triumph, to why certain hymns are sung on Sunday morning. But there is one subject that has come up more than any other since I have been at this church. And that is the problem of how to deal with people who are absolutely certain they have found the one and only way to worship God, and who are outspoken and in your face with their religion. When people approach me with this issue, the conversation usually begins something like this. I work with this guy that goes to such and such church. That's all I need to hear to know where the conversation is headed. Almost as frequently, the subject arises with words similar to these. I have this brother-in-law, and every time the family gets together, again, I can fill in the blanks from there. I'm thoroughly confident every person in this room knows exactly what I'm talking about. These people approach us with a message which typically begins with the question, have you been saved? And I honestly believe that for the most part, they believe what they are doing is the right thing to do. They think they are spreading the gospel message, the good news. But somewhere between the best of intentions and the worst of manners, the gospel message is entirely lost beneath layers of judgment, self-righteousness, and misguided theology. They phrase their message in many ways, but if you cut through to the crux of the message, it is this: I have found favor with God due to the way I practice religion, and you are going to hell for all eternity unless you agree with me. And they say it much nicer than that. And they smile lovingly as they deliver their message. But none of that hides the fact that their message, their version of the good news, is clear. Believe the things I do or go to hell. The word gospel literally means good news. And I suppose the idea that our Creator condemns the vast majority of people in creation to suffer hideously forever fits into somebody's idea of good news. But for those of us who find their message smugly judgmental and contrary to the spirit of our faith, their version of the gospel is not good news at all. And if we engage them in dialogue, tell them about our personal faith, and perhaps mention what church we attend, you can almost envision them holding their noses as they say, I've heard about that church. So the question I want to address this morning is this: how do we respond to these people? What do we say to the person who, with a gleam in his eye or emotional sincerity in her voice, belittles us and in fact condemns us to hell for embracing the Christian faith in a way that is different from the way they practice their religion? I've thought about this a great deal and have myself been in dialogue with men and women of this persuasion countless times. My responses to these people have been varied. I admit that in the past, almost invariably, I have been unhappy with myself after these conversations. I have seldom felt good about myself after discussing religion with a person who, in essence, believes without a doubt that they stand in God's favor and that I am so vile, so loathsome in the eyes of God that I am headed for eternal damnation simply because of who and what I am and for how I think about religion. To begin this discussion, we need to give these people a name, something I am hesitant to do because I don't like labeling people. It tends to make my thinking as narrow as theirs. but for this discussion, I will call them judgmentalists, a contraction of the words judgmental and fundamentalist. I don't want to simply call them fundamentalists because one may believe in the fundamentals, the virgin birth, miracles, the physical resurrection, Bible inerrancy, and the second coming, without being rude and in your face. It's only when those beliefs are combined with smug judgments about other people's faiths that it becomes something ugly. I have identified three ways to respond to the judgmentalist. I'll label these ways reason, emotion, and acceptance. And I've tried them all repeatedly and have discovered that for me, at least, the first two do not work. The first way to respond to this person is to attempt to reason with him or her. Now, for those of us who believe that we are meant to bring both head and heart to the worship of God, this is the way that seems logical to us. But as I'm sure you have discovered, it doesn't work. In fact, attempting to reason with this person is an incredibly frustrating experience. We try to explain that we believe life is a great mystery and that we have come to the conclusion through our faith that God's love is higher, deeper, and wider than the furthest limits of our imaginations. We believe in a God who loves us for who we are, the beloved children of God, and not for what we believe or for having solved some complex riddle hidden in the Bible, which explains how to escape the wrath of God by saying we believe certain things. But to reason with somebody, you must have a conversation. To have a real conversation, both parties must be willing to listen to the other party and to give honest and respectful consideration to everything that is said. I find it almost unbelievable that perfectly intelligent men and women who can capably dialogue with others on any subject cannot discuss religion in the same manner. Frankly, after a few years of seminary, my frustration level went through the roof when discussing religion with judgmentalists. My frustration was grounded in the fact that on the most important questions we can possibly ask ourselves, questions regarding the meaning of life, the destiny of our immortal souls, people seem so willing to accept for themselves and to thrust upon others shallow and superficial answers that they would consider positively unacceptable if the subject were anything other than religion. And as I attempted to discuss these theological issues with them, it became clear that they refused to accept the fact that the greatest minds and sincerest hearts in the history of the church have often disagreed on these issues. In fact, I have on more than one occasion been told that the fact I even study the great theologians of the past 2,000 years proves that I am blind to God's truth. The judgmentalists have no need of the historic church because the answer is provided by their preacher, their church, their denomination are the only answers. And for them, not only are other ideas regarding religion wrong, they refuse to even listen to them because they honestly believe those ideas are most likely inspired by the devil. And please understand, I'm not condemning their theology, only their judgment of my theology. And their judgment led me to the point that it became impossible for me to discuss religion with them. I would compare it to a person who devoted his life to, say, the study of English literature, entering into a conversation with people who insist that, say, Hemingway is the only author worth reading. In fact, all they had ever read was Hemingway. In fact, If you have read something other than Hemingway, they would say, it simply proves you have no understanding of the English language, or you would have realized the futility of examining Shakespeare, Chaucer, Byron, Shelley, Keats, and so on. No, they have never read those writers, but they don't need to, because Hemingway holds every answer for them. Hemingway is the beginning and end of all English literature. And if it wasn't written by Hemingway, it should not have been written. And that is fine, except if Hemingway isn't your cup of tea, you might as well talk to the wall about English literature, because real conversation has been rendered impossible. You will only be frustrated. Relating this situation to theology, I abandon the idea of reasoning with judgmentalists. The second response to these people is the emotional response, and it flows naturally from our failure to be able to reason with them, because every point we make is either unheard, misunderstood, or deliberately misinterpreted, we feel backed into a corner. And we respond with the very human response of anger. Sometimes our anger shows and sometimes it doesn't. But the fact is, either way, we lose. If we lash out and say, I don't understand how you can take the words of Jesus, which basically say to love everybody and judge nobody, and turn them into a religion that gives you the right to judge others and tell them how to believe. And as our frustration level rises, so does our anger, and ultimately, we come across every bit as irrational as the people who have backed us into a theological corner. More likely, we keep our anger inside, and we're not mad at them for how they believe. We're mad at them for making us feel bad about ourselves. And even when we know in our hearts that they are wrong, it is still extremely painful to be confronted by someone whose seemingly kind and helpful words are in fact saying that our entire existence is an affront to God. It would be hurtful enough for a person to say, your politics are all wrong, or I think what you do for a living is just terrible. But this is much, much more offensive. The message is that if you have not met their definition of being saved, you are not only unfit to live in the same world with them, you deserve to be tormented through eternity by your Creator. How can you help but feel angry? But my response tells me that responding emotionally is just as unproductive as attempting to reason with the judgmentalists. They walk away from the conversation feeling like they have done their sacred duty, and we walk away feeling just awful. I have not found the perfect way to deal with judgmentalists, but I will tell you the best way I have discovered, and that is acceptance. The acceptance method that I have devised has four rules, which I will explain. The first rule of the acceptance method is this: do not discuss religion with a judgmentalist. I'm serious now, doggone it, just don't do it. And it isn't easy, is it? Our natural inclination is to want to reason with these people. But always remember, your words will not be heard. There will be no real conversation. It's hard to accept, I know. It's sort of like a train wreck. You want to look away, but you just can't. Same thing, you know you're getting sucked into something, but you just jump right in, thinking you're going to reason this individual into an intelligent faith. It's not going to happen. And I tell you again, the first rule of the acceptance method: do not discuss religion with a judgmentalist. Rule number two: with a single phrase, state your position and praise their sincerity. You need to come up with your own phrase but devise one and just memorize it. An example of an appropriate phrase would be, "My faith is one of the most important things in my life, although I'm not comfortable discussing religion with friends. However, I certainly admire the strength of your convictions and your strong commitment to your faith." This closes the door. In a single sentence, you have told them you consider them a friend, that you have faith, that you admire their faith, and you don't want to discuss the matter any further. And you've done it in a perfectly polite way. If they begin the discussion by asking you that question so loved by judgmentalists, "Have you been saved?" just say yes. Because the question they are really asking is this: have you been saved from that angry God who just can't wait to send you to hell for all eternity? And you can honestly answer yes, because you were saved from that angry and vengeful God when your faith matured to the point that you realized there is no such God. God is not angry. God is not vengeful. God is our loving and merciful creator, sustainer, and redeemer. God loves us with every breath we take. And hell isn't a place God created for us. It's a condition we create for ourselves when we turn away from God's love. Have you been saved? Yes. Have you seen God's love? Yes. Have you seen the power of God's love on the cross? Yes. Don't enter into a theological debate. Just say yes. The third rule of the acceptance method is the most difficult. Truly accept them as they are. Let me tell you a story my brother-in-law told me, a story he heard told by a seminary professor. The story goes that when this professor was himself a seminary student, he stayed at a boarding house, renting a small room from a woman only a couple of blocks from the school. One Wednesday evening, this future professor was bored, and he wandered around the small town, and he came upon a church that was having some sort of revival celebration. He spent an hour or two there, hearing fire and brimstone preaching and watching people jumping around and clapping their hands and acting in ways that he thought were entirely undignified. When he returned to the boarding house, the woman who owned it asked him where he had been, and he told her that he had been to this particular church. He was about to tell her that he was certainly above all that silliness, and that as far as he was concerned, everybody in the place was some sort of nut. But before he could say a word, she said, "Oh, isn't that a wonderful place?" She went on to enthusiastically explain how her own son had fallen into alcohol and drug addictions as a teenager. He married right out of high school, had three children, none of whom he gave any love or attention. He soon became known as a carouser and spent his nights at local bars, drifting from job to job, and on occasion even became violent with his wife and children. But then some friend convinced him to go to that church, and something happened. Now he carries a Bible with him everywhere he goes. He quit drinking and drugging. He's got a steady job. He takes care of his wife, and he's absolutely devoted to his children. That future professor learned an important lesson that night, and it's a lesson we all have to keep in mind when we're approached by a judgmentalist. The lesson, of course, is different strokes for different folks. And so rule number three is important. Even if we find the theology and manner of this person distasteful, we need to remember that they not only have a right to their theology, it is in all likelihood making them a much better person than they would be without it. The fourth and final rule of the acceptance method is this: actions speak louder than words. I could spend all day quoting Bible verses that make this point. Let your light shine before others. Faith without works is dead. They will see your honorable deeds and glorify God. Our verbal testimony cannot compete with that of a judgmentalist. So our testimony must be the way we live our lives. Actions are the true mark of a genuine faith. Real faith changes us. It makes us better people. And if there is one thing I believe above all else, it is that Christianity is a way of life and not a rigid set of beliefs. My mother told me a story when I was growing up several times, and I think it's a story worth sharing with you. During the Depression, my mother lived in Lyons, Indiana. This was a tiny community in southern Indiana with a grand total of one grocery store. As it happened, that grocery store was owned by my mother's grandparents. Now let me describe my mother's grandparents to you as they have been described to me over the years. Her grandfather was a man who had a bad leg. Nobody was exactly sure what the source of this ailment was, but the only time it ever flared up was on Sunday mornings, when the pain in his leg made it impossible for him to sit on those hard wooden pews at the local church. It didn't escape too many people's notice, his wife's in particular, that the pain was not so excruciating that he was unable to spend his Sunday mornings sitting on the equally hard pickle barrel at the grocery store playing checkers with all his buddies. Now his wife, my mother's grandmother, on the other hand, never missed church and was known as an extremely religious woman. She carried her Bible with her everywhere she went. In fact, according to my mother, she was so religious, people would cross the street when they saw her coming to keep from bumping into her. And they would duck into the nearest shop at the mere rumor that she was soon to be arriving on Main Street. Well, this was the Depression, and times being what they were, food was hard to come by. But one of my mother's strongest childhood memories is that when a person came into that grocery store with a dollar, if they were waited on by her grandmother, they got exactly $1 worth of food. But if her grandfather was tending the store, they always walked out with enough to feed their families for that week. The impression that left on my mother was strong, and I was raised to believe that the more one talks about their religion, the more they themselves are probably in need of a genuine, loving faith. And like my mother, I grew up thinking that her grandfather was a more Christian person than her grandmother. Actions speak louder than words. So to recap the four rules for responding to a judgmentalist. Number one, do not discuss religion with them. Rule number two, devise a single sentence response to their attempts to drag you into a theological discussion. Rule number three, accept them as they are. Rule number four, let your actions speak for your faith. This may work for you, and it may not. I will be the first to admit that I often find myself wanting to reason with these people, but I will tell you that I have never yet, after one of those discussions, had a judgmentalist say to me, "I see what you're saying. So love is what it's all about." Gosh, thanks, Gary. I don't know what I was thinking with all that judgment and hell stuff. Hasn't happened, and it's not going to. And most importantly, recognize that while they are defining the terms of salvation and claiming you are outside the reach of God's grace, it is very important that you don't close yourself off in response to their judgments. I leave you with Edwin Markham's marvelous poem about the circle. He drew a circle to shut me out. Heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that took him in. Amen.